Character level, 51. Hit points, 2,586 of 2,586. Endurance points, 1,869 of 2,172. Statistics, strength, S, 103, 403. Agility, A, 105, 308.4. Intelligence, I, 5, 25.8. Constitution, C, 105, 430.5. Perception, P, 3, 63.5. Charisma, CH, 100, 125. Unused points, 0. Primary skills, 7 of 7 chosen. Herbalism, P, A, 27. Trading, CH, I, 25. Alchemy, I, A, 29. Dodging, A, P, 23. Stealth, A, C, 30. Exotic weapons, A, P, 16. Riding, A, C, 21. Secondary skills, 6 of 7 chosen. Veil, 16. Acrobatics, 20. Athletics, 20. Foreman, 46. Animal control, 32. War chief, 4. First of all, my boss wanted to know why I still hadn't taken one secondary skill. I answered that the next slot was reserved for a weapon that used strength, and that I was still thinking about it. That answer didn't satisfy my director at all. Well, that's stupid. There are lots of weapons that use strength in the exotic weapon category. All kinds of sickles and bolasses, not only for throwing, but also for melee. There are even kukri and karambits that are governed by exotic weapon, not dagger. Sure, such weapons aren't especially commonplace, but they can easily be found at auctions, and as a rule, the price is acceptable due to low demand. Why should you waste a valuable slot for a weapon skill when you already have one that gets little use? I promised my boss to think over his suggestion and search for something appropriate to my Amra at auction. Max Toner then grumbled a bit about my weak skill leveling for a level 51 character, expressed satisfaction at the increase in my herbalism, and then ended the meeting. The director was purposely avoiding bringing up Taisha, and every time I mentioned my goblin companion, he immediately steered the conversation in another direction. What could I do? I didn't insist, especially because I didn't know what was going on with Taisha now and was seriously worried for her. But still, I asked the director to give me another few minutes. Today, along with a few others, I finished the Children of Warg's quest. It gave me a serious debuff, reducing the number of pets I can control, a minor improvement of my relationship with wargs, and nothing more. In the mission conditions, there was a variable reward listed, but it seems I didn't get it. Let's check. The director turned the monitor away from me again and started using the service console to enter commands, spent a long time looking at something on the screen, then his lips stretched into a smile. No, everything is correct, Timothy. There's already a reward coming your way. You just haven't gotten it. I won't tell you what it is exactly. Let that be a pleasant surprise for you. Very pleasant. Valeria was in a great mood when I came in and was combing her stylish long hair, sitting on the bed next to a cracked opened window. I saw a dish on the bedside table with peeled mandarins, sliced apples, and kiwis. Kira came by, my sister commented, having seen my interest in the fruits. We spent a whole hour walking around the hospital garden together and talking about all sorts of stuff. She said goodbye just a half hour ago and went off to do something.
Whoa. Very positive news. That meant that, despite the fight with me, Kira was still talking with my sister.
And had Kira perhaps asked about the goblin thief girl Taisha? It was hardly plausible, of course, because, technically, my sister thought her new friend was the owner of a designer fashion store, not a highly experienced tester for the Boundless Realm Corporation and the most powerful queen of the harpies. But how great would it be if they had? After all, Val was one of the few who could say how extremely unusual the NPC girl was, and that would be the beginning of Kira and I making up. As if out of nowhere, I asked Valeria what they'd talked about.
Fashion, dresses,
Modern art and literature, all kinds of ladies' secrets. It would have bored you to death. We also spent a long time talking about my new bionic legs. The operation is scheduled for the day after tomorrow. Then I'll have to spend 2 days laying on a special hospital table, stuck full of wires and all kinds of readers, while the doctors make sure my body doesn't reject the devices. So for 3 or 4 days, I'll be out of the game, and you'll have to get by in Boundless Realm without my help. The news was a double-edged sword. At first, I didn't know how to react. Of course, I was strangely glad that my beloved sister would finally get legs, but it was such bad timing. I suppressed my annoyance. I couldn't be so egotistic. No virtual game or quests were worth Valeria's tears. So I put on a happy expression for Val and reassured her. She was a bit nervous before the upcoming operation. We took a walk in the hospital garden. Valeria simply clicked repeat previous route on the console of her wheelchair, and it followed the paths on its own. Its rubber wheels gave a slight whir on the white sand. We spoke exclusively about Boundless Realm, especially what had happened this morning and our plans for the evening. This morning, when Valeriana Quickfoot had entered the game, she had convinced me, Max Sochnier, and Shrexen Bastard to try and have the NPC orcs move automatically on the map. The Naiad and the Ogre were not too happy to exit the game when they'd basically just entered, but they still agreed to give it a shot. The Ogre quickly hacked together 4 sedan chairs, where we Undying sat down, and I chose the very strongest orcs to carry them on their shoulders. I placed a target on the map for Ziabash Hardy, where it read Lower Fort, a fortification on the very edge of the lands of the savage Rougarou. What kind of fort it was, who built it, and if someone lived in it now, I did not know. All the same, the forest nymph confirmed that it would be a decent place for us to spend the night, because many expeditions had used it before. The fort was 72 kilometers away, and, by my calculations, the squadron of NPC orcs should reach it before it got dark outside. Everything was ready for the expedition, but Max Sochnier asked us to wait a bit before we left, because he was waiting for his nephew to come back. I didn't understand how the human healer would be getting back to us after dying in last night's battle and respawning who knows where, but the Naiad trader said it was possible. Antonius Just can create magical scrolls, and he told me he made a teleportation scroll to this orc camp, just in case he happened to die. I figured that, in the morning, my nephew would already be back, but, for some reason, he just isn't coming. Max Sochnier even left the game to figure out the reason for the delay. He came back a few minutes later, angry as a devil. Antonius Just won't be coming. He changed his mind. He said there's some interesting stuff going on in his clan, and he'd rather do that. Unlike my friend, I was more glad than upset. Antonius Just gave me a knee-jerk feeling of anxiety and mistrust, so I wouldn't be missing his company one bit. The orcs lifted the sedan chairs and started on their way. I left Boundless Realm not long after, as did all the other Undying. And now, walking around the park, my sister and I were actively discussing the game and worrying about our army's progress. Had they gone anywhere, or were they just staying in place? There was no way to go in during the day and check. It would immediately violate the whole concept of moving safely through the desolate, unpopulated lands of Boundless Realm, because in the presence of a live observer, it would load the whole dangerous location with all the obstacles, thick swamps, dense thickets, and deadly monsters. My sister assured me that there was nothing unusual in moving this way. Once before, we had traveled on the dwarf train, and on re-entering the game, we'd found ourselves in a moving vehicle, not where we'd exited Boundless Realm. Also, when traveling by ship, we hadn't just shown up in the middle of the open ocean where we'd left the game, but in our cabin. In theory, our situation was no different from those previous examples. All in all, my sister managed to convince me there was nothing to worry about, and she was right. But Valeria started beating herself up over a different issue. She didn't know about the rare sickles, kukri, and other exotic weapons that used strength.
I was planning to waste your last skill slot for such a stupid thing. I nearly hobbled your character, Timothy. I'm a worthless advisor.
I reassured my sister, saying everything was fine, it wasn't too late, and we had acquired valuable knowledge about the game. Nevertheless, Valeria's mood was ruined. My sister took her mistake very hard and suggested we go back to her hospital room, where she could search auctions on her tablet, and immediately order something for delivery to the lower fort. I didn't even manage to enter the corporation skyscraper before an armed guard standing at the entrance hurried to leave his post and blocked my path.
"Not so fast. I have an order from the security service to bring you to their office. It's right here on the first floor. Follow me."
A thousand worrisome thoughts were spinning in my head. I tried to imagine why I'd caught their interest. I really hoped I hadn't unknowingly broken a corporate rule or accidentally spent another player's money on a real-world purchase. Come on, I basically only made purchases with prize money from the sale of Great Hunt tokens. Or was it somehow connected with Kira? I was reminded that her guard team was composed of security service employees. As it turned out, it wasn't the first, second, or third option. Once in the office, an elderly man with a mustache and a security service uniform immediately cheered me up by saying that they'd followed up on my inquiry, done some checking, and as a result, two members of the Grave Worms had been exposed and detained. Both of them had been hired by the Boundless Realm Corporation for a trial period in different departments within the last few days. Next to me, a projector was displaying the faces of the two young men on the wall. They were clearly immigrants from the Middle East, and, in a certain degree, even resembled one another. It was the first time I'd seen one of them, but I recognized the second immediately. He was the guy I'd bumped into in the revolving door to the corporation building, who I had crossed paths with a few times in the criminal neighborhood. That was exactly what I told the man. The gray-haired security guard gave a nod of satisfaction, then told me that both of them had already been interrogated, and everything I said was confirmed.
"The ringleaders of the Grave Worms have promised 7,000 credits to whoever can kill you, and this information is known in the whole neighborhood. It's a very, very significant sum, from what I understand. What's more, they'll let anyone do the killing. It doesn't have to be someone in their gang."
7,000 was a huge amount of money for the vast majority of people in this city, not just those who lived in poor neighborhoods. I immediately felt extremely uncomfortable, seeing a gun in the man's belt holster. It seemed the guard also sensed that, because he gave a kind-hearted chuckle and continued,
"Timothy, your personal file is secret, and I would need a special permission to access it. But from what I could get my hands on, you've had some unpleasant run-ins with this gang before. Their desire to get revenge and punish is basically easy to understand. But both people we arrested told us independently that whoever wants you dead had an extremely unusual condition. You were only to be killed while inside a virtual reality capsule. Only in that case would the 7,000 be paid out. In all others, the assassin would be tortured to death. This is the first time I've come up against anything like it in my practice. I'll admit I'm at a loss. Maybe you have some of your own ideas about who might have put out such an unusual hit?"
No, I had no idea. Maybe the Grave Worms wanted to demonstrate that even the most powerful protectors couldn't keep runaways from payback? All in all, I didn't understand at all, either. The mustached guard took a disappointed sigh and slumped his shoulders. It seemed he was hoping I could help him solve the riddle. After promising me that, from now on, all new hires would be checked for ties to the Grave Worms, the man wished me a good shift and let me go.
"Come in, Timothy."
The assistant to the head of the Special Projects Division joyfully threw open the doors before me.
"Mr. Toner just left, but I found all the necessary information for you. Would you like some coffee?"
I didn't refuse and told Tina she was amazing, along with some other words of admonition for her spending work time on my problems.
"And what is the name of the sixth item from Fenrir's cursed regalia?" I inquired while the girl was making coffee, not hiding my impatience. "The Mask of Fenrir," Tina answered readily, but seeing me reach for my smartphone, she rebuffed me. "Don't search for it, Timothy. It's no use. The object isn't in the knowledge base, because it was never added to the game."
"How's that?" I asked, simultaneously surprised and horrified. What did that mean? My grand dream of gathering all six items from Fenrir's cursed regalia was impossible, even in theory? But Tina clearly did not consider the conversation over, nor her discovery pointless. More likely, it was the opposite. The girl was overflowing with enthusiasm. She handed me a cup of coffee and sat in a chair opposite mine, crossed her legs, and said with a satisfied smile,
"So then, Timothy,
you won't be able to squirm out of a serious conversation. 100,000 credits, and the item can be in your inventory today.
I nearly spit out my coffee.
100,000? She'd lost her mind.
But Tina didn't think so.
The price is totally justified, considering how much getting the whole set is worth to you. Just so you know, without my help, the item will never exist in the game. So, think carefully.
I was sitting in the chair, drinking the strong coffee in small sips, not rushing to answer.
100,000. That was a huge amount of money by any standards. I didn't want to waste the money, but that wasn't even the problem. I was fearfully displeased by the whole situation. It just looked too much like the old scandal with the Wyvern Egg, where Alexandro Lavrius had tried to put an item into the game by unsporting means and give it to a certain player as a payoff. I knew perfectly that that story had ended quite badly for all the employees with unclean hands. What was more, I couldn't write off the possibility that there was no sixth object, and I was now just being tested to make sure I followed the rules. My agreement to this unclean deal could lead to instant loss of employment and an accusation of theft of the corporation's virtual property. But maybe my fears were overstated, and by refusing, I was missing my last chance to get the whole set. Seeing that I was in no rush to answer, Tina continued.
The Mask of Fenrir was not put into the game because they haven't finished calculating what might happen if one player got all six objects. At the very least, that was how it was explained to me by tech support. Basically, from what they said, the idea of Fenrir's regalia came spontaneously and wasn't thought through all the way. But our programmers have created the mask. It has a unique number, so it would be a small matter to put the object into the game with service commands.
While Tina was speaking, I finally made my choice.
No, Tina. I refuse to acquire the object by dishonest means. It isn't worth the helmet itself, nor even the whole set, to be booted out of work, and also be accused of stealing the corporation's virtual property.
Great decision, Timothy.
I then leapt up in surprise when a raspy woman's voice rang out from a seemingly inactive computer. I quickly realized that someone else was carefully listening to our conversation via webcam.
Tina, you should have asked for a smaller amount. I told you like 30 or 40,000. Where'd you come up with 100,000 all of a sudden?
The girl shuddered in fear and lowered her head in shame. I then finally recognized the voice coming from the speakers. It was Inessa Tile, vice president of the Boundless Realm Corporation, one of the richest women on the planet, and Kira's very own grandmother.
So this really was a test?
I didn't even know if I should get mad at my highly placed superior for such a guileful examination, or be happy that, with some sixth sense, I managed to root out the trick and had not taken the bait. And meanwhile, Inessa Tile said in a raspy old lady's voice,
Timothy, forgive this old bat for the little show. I want to see you in my office. You do remember how to get here, I hope.
I confirmed that I did, and headed straight for the exit so I wouldn't keep such an important person waiting. And when I said goodbye to Tina, I saw a strange and complicated mixture of admiration, curiosity, and sadness. It seemed that my boss's assistant didn't know I was already familiar with the second person in the Boundless Realm Corporation. As a prospective suitor, I had just grown significantly in her eyes, but Tina now must have thought her chances of getting with me were much lower. This time, there was more than enough vigilant security on the 77th floor of the skyscraper. I had to go through several guard posts, where I was x-rayed and searched before being allowed to pass into a room with glass walls, where I was already awaited by the gray-haired lady lounging in a deep armchair. The elderly woman was wrapped up tight in a warm shawl. For some reason, I didn't notice right away how severely the old lady's fingers were shaking.
Normally, I greet guests on my feet, but for some reason, I'm tired today,
the lady said in response to my polite greeting.
In fact, Inessa Tile did not look too healthy. She was in no way reminiscent of the nimble, vivacious woman who had been feeding fish with her own hands on my last visit. Now she really seemed like a 90-year-old woman, not trying to hide her age or artificially rejuvenate herself.
Let me beg your apology again for that little test of honesty. In my defense, I can say that I studied your detailed dossier fairly well, which included a psychological portrait, and I had no doubt in your honesty. Overall, if I had been wrong about you...
Inessa Tile gave a predatory smile, showing her perfectly maintained teeth.
Let's just say I really don't like when people disappoint me.
I didn't answer, although mentally I was surprised that the vice president of a huge corporation wanted to acquaint herself with the personal dossier of one of her many thousands of employees. I'll admit, I still didn't understand why I aroused such stubborn attention of the upper leadership, and that frightened me. Meanwhile, Inessa Tile continued her speech.
You see, Timothy, Fenrir's cursed regalia was created on my direct orders. And I was also the exact person who reversed that decision and prevented one of the items from being added to the game, because I wasn't sure of the consequences. I didn't want to take all the responsibility for the fact that the huge pack of predators was back, and could threaten all Boundless Realm. Last time it took the coordinated efforts of 28,000 players to get the better of the threat. But this time it won't be a program controlling the Grey Pack, but a living player, who's tricky, smart, and unpredictable. Who knows where that might lead?
It seems she was trying to convince me that I was in too great a rush to collect Fenrir's cursed regalia and had failed, because the full set would never appear in-game. I needed to immediately intervene and convince Inessa Tile, otherwise my dream threatened to remain unfulfilled. Choosing my words carefully, I tried to express myself to the important vice president.
But from what I've heard, the global event with Fenrir was praised very highly by corporate leadership. The predatory, uncatchable pack forced players to leave the cities, which they were sick to death of, gave birth to a number of clans, and forced them to act together, keeping several regions in a state of agitation, adding precisely what the users craved: intrigue, excitement, and an element of danger. As far as I know, all corporate employees who took part in the mass event got significant bonuses, and some even got promoted. Meanwhile, the experience of creating intelligence algorithms for the Grey Pack is what allowed the programmers to make Taisha, a next-generation NPC.
The gray-haired lady smiled a somewhat tortured smile and pressed a button on the armrest of her chair. A young woman immediately entered the room with a deep bow and placed a glass of shimmering, bubbly, lemon-colored liquid on the table before Inessa. The vice president waited for her to leave, took a small sip, and continued.
My heart is acting up. Anyway, back to the conversation. Timothy, your view of the Fenrir event is too positive. It wasn't all so smooth, even though there were lots of worthwhile moments. The programmers created a force so strong the players couldn't ignore it. Reining it in was quite difficult. The main feature of the pack is that it quickly restored its losses by adding more NPC predators, while the program controlling it was self-teaching and took its errors into account. There were times when it seemed the power they created was out of control and growing without limit, so the only way of solving it was to artificially shut it down. But the players eventually handled it on their own. It was all they could talk about on the news for many days. It was quite the uproar.
Inessa Tile went silent, thinking in agitation. I was just trying not to bother the vice president.
Maybe you're right, Timothy, the old lady said in the end. The idea of a living player as the new Fenrir really is not so bad. What's more, you'll clearly need the forces where you're heading. Higher up the Styx, there are more territories of the Dark Sovereign, the new uber-boss of Boundless Realm. That said, our designers and programmers are still working on him, so he isn't in the game yet, but his armies are already large in number, and his underlings are not very welcoming. You've met one of them already, so you have experience.
I raised my head in surprise, and Inessa Tile laughed with an old lady's voice.
Yes, yes, Timothy. Don't be surprised. I have been attentively watching all your video clips. Vampire, owner of a flying snake, alpha of the Grey Pack, commander of an army of orc pirates, and the legal husband of an NPC thief. It's created a very unusual cocktail. But you still aren't living up to your potential. All in all, Timothy, I'm not against you becoming the reincarnation of Fenrir. But I'll only allow it under the condition that the Grey Pack will not attack cities or come to the most populated regions of Boundless Realm. All the same, no matter how you spin it, the vast majority of our players prefer peaceful gameplay, crafting, trade, and easy questing. Such players bring the company most of its money, and there's no reason to saw off the branch we're all sitting on.
I confirmed to the Vice President that I understood everything perfectly and was not planning to break the game world, which most players liked just the way it was. And after that, I cautiously inquired why Inessa Tile thought the new Fenrir had to be me. Say what you will, but I had only 3 out of the 6 Fenrir items, and some other player could easily start trying to collect them all as well. The old lady in the chair drank down her medicine and placed the glass on the table. After that, she leaned in my direction and said,
"I would never allow someone I didn't know to collect the whole set. But I like you. You're proper and honest. You help your friends and sister, and you aren't even remotely selfish. So, I feel like an old tortoise trying to give a golden key to a mischievous lad that's caught my fancy. Have you ever heard of Tortilla?"
I shook my head no, as this was the first time I'd heard such a name. It seemed Inessa Tile was somewhat upset.
I sometimes forget that I'm a prehistoric dinosaur who's outlived my epoch. Modern youth don't know about Buratino. Anyway, it doesn't matter. As far as I know, only you could have gotten several of the Fenrir items and found out about the bonuses by doing so. The rest of the players see only cursed items, which are very hard to take off, so they don't seem particularly valuable. Anyhow, I don't see the sense in wasting time throwing the Mask of Fenrir up for auction or giving it to anyone else. You'll get your hands on it eventually, no matter what. It'll just cost you time and money. So I'll have that girl you were talking to in the office add the Mask of Fenrir to your inventory.
Would you look at that? I'll be honest, I could barely hold back from hugging and kissing the sweet old lady. I was overflowing with the wildest elation. Inessa Tile, who had easily guessed my emotions, smiled good-heartedly.
"You heard about one of the other objects from the Jinn Sultan. It's a bit far away, of course, but your flying snake will be able to get you there. The last object in the set is now located in Taisha's inventory. A few days ago, I'd have said that meant it was already yours, but I'm not so sure anymore."
"Why not?" I asked in surprise. The Vice President's assertion both made me glad and confused.
"You see, Timothy, Taisha feels quite happy in the Legion of Steel, and seems to be satisfied with life. Yes, I know you and her having certain understandings, but it's been 2 days since then, and lots has changed. Your girl has grown a lot in level and skill, made a bunch of new friends and acquaintances, and may not want to return after so much time with the stars of the game. And there is one more reason for my doubts, of a totally different nature. The in-game security service has traced a few phone calls from Boundless Realm and believes it may have been your green girlfriend that hired the killers."
Now that was a twist. The news was clearly shocking, although I believed the Vice President at once, because it explained the strange fact that I was supposed to be murdered while in my virtual reality capsule. It seemed my NPC wife had made the wrong conclusions from Valeria's recent suicide attempt, and wanted to make my Amra stay in Boundless Realm forever. Lower Fort.
I don't remember leaving the Vice President's office. It was like I was in a cloud. I hope I at least said goodbye to Inessa Tile, although I was not totally sure of that. All my thoughts were occupied with what she'd said about Taisha. How could my virtual girlfriend have dared to treat me that way? On the tester floor, Leon and Max Sochnier were already waiting for me. The clock was showing 7:30 p.m., and theoretically, our orcs already should have been nearing the lower fort.
"You're late, Timothy," Leon reproached me. "You said we'd meet at 7:20, and then all log in together at 7:30.
I didn't try to defend myself or tell them I'd been on an urgent call to the VP. Instead, I suggested we not waste time and load up the game. In my work cabin, I didn't even have dinner, even though I hadn't eaten anything today except a light breakfast, and my stomach was slightly groaning in hunger. But there was no time for food now. I had to go into the game. A message jumped in about a few incoming letters and a package, but I didn't waste time reading them, having decided to handle the correspondence later. The letters had probably, after all, come from players who wanted to kill the rare vampire in the game and were making the offers. And the package probably contained the spiky ball on a strong metal chain my sister and I had chosen today as my goblin's exotic melee weapon. So then, loading. The world lit up. I saw myself sitting on a sedan chair on the ground. All around were some hurriedly nailed together wooden buildings. Over my head was the evening sky, thick with clouds. Next to me was a whole horde of orcs and wolves with a friendly opinion of me. Meanwhile, on the minimap, there were 15 unknown players in my immediate vicinity. I shuddered in surprise, seeing so many undying next to my Amra. Who were they? Were they just here by coincidence? I saw a clan tag reading Light next to a few names. It couldn't be pure chance, then. These people were from the same clan as Antonius Just, the human healer I had a firm mistrust of. These players had clearly come from my head. So I acted more intuitively than consciously.
Orcs! On the attack! Take them all down!
Warchief skill increased to level 5. Foreman skill increased to level 47. It probably would have been good to at least take a closer look at the enemy for a start, see their levels and classes, but I was hoping to catch them by surprise, and it turned out to be the right decision. It was all over in just 20 seconds. I didn't even manage to take part in the battle and try out the fearsome-looking spiky metal ball on a chain, which I found a step from me. The dozen confused players didn't have time to get any serious resistance together and were literally torn to shreds by the horde of bloodthirsty orcs and the Grey Pack, rushing in from all sides. I barely managed to stop my warriors before they took down two inactive players, who were standing slightly aside, clearly away from their computers.
"Tie them up,"
I ordered my cutthroats, pointing to the undying prisoners.
"I'll interrogate them later. Where's our ogre fortifier?"
Shrex and Bastard ran up to me, looking somewhat strange and even funny in the dark armor suit with two head holes. I saw a bloodied hammer in the Titan's hands and the bright red criminal marker over his head. Our ogre had managed to caress one of the enemies with his frightening sledgehammer. And it should be said that the naiad, the forest nymph and I, also had such markers over our heads.
"Leon, I see a respawn stone right here in our fort on the mini-map, and probably all of the people we just killed managed to change their respawn point there. You've got just an hour to surround the whole area with sharpened stakes. Don't let any of the undying respawn. If need be, let Max Sochnier and Valeriana Quickfoot help you. I might join up a bit later. And don't count on the other members of the squadron helping you out. NPCs cannot come near."
"Great idea, Big Ears," the forest nymph supported me. "But there are two things I'd like to know. First, how are you able to hand out quests left and right? Just now, me and the ogre and the naiad got a group, time-limited quest. And at that, the reward is so generous that we now have no choice but to try. And second, how were these enemy players able to track us down?"
"Nothing to fear,"
the naiad traitor jumped into our conversation, wiping blood from his trident.
"As I already said, my nephew has the ability to create magical scrolls, and he could have made portals here for his clan. Or maybe they still had some left from their previous unsuccessful expedition."
Most likely, that was exactly what had happened. But as far as I knew, all teleportation scroll copies made from one original could open a portal only to one specific point.
That meant we needed to find that point and go there to meet the guests with traps and spears at the ready. First, I tried to use my wolves' sense of smell and my perception to determine where exactly the players had shown up, but I met with failure. Everything inside the small fort was densely trodden, so I couldn't follow the footprints. But then I got a better idea. I walked up to the two bound players, a level 88 bowman and a level 95 paladin. Both were inactive as before, but that wasn't what I needed now. I twirled the spiked ball in my hands with doubt, and decided to put my new weapon in my inventory. I might accidentally kill the prisoners that way. Instead, I took out my dagger and made a small wound on the bowman's neck, lowering his health bar by a quarter. It wasn't deadly, but it was immediately noticeable. I activated my veil icon immediately, changing the logs. Here was the log the player would have seen. Damage taken, 331, 418 dagger strike, minus 87 armor. But I changed it to something else entirely, much more worrisome. Damage taken, 331, 418 vampire bite, minus 87 armor. Attention, your character has been infected with vampirism. You have just 48 hours to cure the disease, otherwise the effect will become permanent, and you will become a bloodthirsty vampire. Veil skill increased to level 17. I did the same with the bound paladin, then ordered the four orcs to guard the prisoners and immediately tell me if they woke up or moved. I then met with Ziabash Hardy and ordered my first mate to guard the fort, placing sentries on the walls and assigning posts and shifts. I told him to also make sure the rest of the soldiers were well fed and would be sent to the different buildings to get some sleep. After Ziabash Hardy left, I found myself in calm circumstances, so I set about studying the Mask of Fenrir, which had already been added to my inventory. But I froze stock still when I saw the fat chef walking around the camp with heavy bags. Tondic Exuberant still had just a rag-wrapped stump instead of a left hand, and his right was still missing two fingers. How? Had the elixir of regeneration not worked? I thought the chef would now be making dinner for my orcs, but he was still wounded and could barely handle his duties.
Captain Amra.
The fat dwarf's only remaining eye was cast down at the ground. The chef clearly didn't know where to begin.
I immediately realized. Here's the thing. Captain, did you know? My neighbor in the tent, numb spiteful, isn't some gloomy and fearsome mechanic man, but a dwarven lady from an influential family. Of course, I've known that for a long time, I said, not trying to clarify that I had only found that out by coincidence in the subterranean city of Dotur Kawe.
Wait, Tondic, can't you tell by looking?
That's the problem. I couldn't tell.
The fat dwarf grew even more embarrassed.
I thought my neighbor was just a bearded red-headed dwarf, quarrelsome and squat, and that's why I was acting that way. I was rude, swearing, vulgar. We talked about the kind of things one is ashamed to discuss with a girl. What an idiot I must have looked like. But this morning, we started talking about our relatives and...
Tondic Exuberant took a heavy sigh.
Well, I know her family, and quickly realized who it was before me. So I gave the elixir of regeneration to her. A dwarven man can survive with just one eye and one arm, but a pretty girl shouldn't feel mutilated.
During his speech, Tondic was looking at the floor and couldn't see that Numb Spiteful had come up to us now, on both legs, without any crutches, and was carefully listening to the words of her compatriot. Vanessa didn't say anything, just gave Tondic, who just noticed her and fallen sharply silent, an approving slap on the shoulder. All the same, from the words that appeared before my eyes, I realized everything would be okay. Mission renewed. Marrying off a son. Additional condition completed. Make Tondic Exuberant a well-known dwarf traveler and find him a wife. I asked both dwarves to start making dinner for the whole army, promising to send my niece and nephew, Eric and Yuna, to help them, along with the cleverest orcs in my squadron. We still had plenty of meat, and the orcs had discovered some provisions left behind in a storeroom by a previous expedition. There were all kinds of vegetables, rings of dried fish, corned beef, and a barrel of beer, so there was no chance my warriors would go hungry.
Finally, after dealing with the camp's defense and feeding the soldiers, I took advantage of a free minute and removed the mask of Fenrir from my inventory. It looked fearsome, like a snarling wolf's snout. Fenrir's mask helmet, unique item. Plus 250 constitution, plus 250 strength, 50% resistance to elemental magic, plus 50 to reaction of the following: demonic creatures, mythical creatures, unique creatures. Attention! Your character's level is too low to use this object. Requisite level, 125. Just what I was afraid of. I needed a very high level to use the mask. And although I still had two Ifrit hearts sitting around, which could remove level requirement, there were three more objects in the set. There was nothing to be done. I'd have to use one of the hearts. I popped the black stone into my mouth, and it gave a beat in my goblin's toothy maw. You have activated a magical item. You have the choice of what effect you would like to receive. I removed level requirement from the mask of Fenrir and strapped the helmet onto my head. Immediately, my goblin's shoulders grew broader. His muscles even visually grew larger. No matter how I tried to keep my flap-eared Amra small, funny, and inoffensive, I was looking less and less that way all the time. My goblin was now bigger and more muscular. Before my eyes, then, there ran a whole bedsheet of text. You have equipped four items from Fenrir's cursed regalia. Set bonus unlocked. All members of the Grey Pack will receive a bonus of plus 100 strength, plus 100 agility, plus 100 constitution, plus 75% movement speed, plus 75% experience gain. Mission completed. Fenrir's legacy, 2 of 4. Reward, 25,000 experience, plus 10 animal control, plus 50 strength, plus 50 agility, plus 50 constitution. Grey Pack member limit raised to 12. The helmet looked very impressive. I could tell that as soon as I opened my character equipment window and looking at my goblin from all angles. The viewers would also like the snarling wolf snout with its scary fangs. But the bonuses given by the unique object were much more important than appearances. It restored the Grey Pack's member limit to 12. So I now had 2 free slots for the Grey Pack. And also, I was just a handful of experience points shy of level 52, less than 3,000. If it weren't for the curse, which gave a serious penalty to Amra's experience, I'd have already grown in level. All the same, I wasn't allowed to spend too long admiring my new item and noticeably increased combat characteristics. The tied-up paladin had come to his senses, and I hurried to talk with the captive.
Lancelot, Knight of the Round Table. Human. Level 95 Paladin. Light.
The bound captive didn't look scared at all, more like surprised and slightly pensive. I walked up to the paladin and spoke first, immediately trying to take initiative in the conversation.
Lancelot, or more likely Sir Lancelot, given that you're a knight. You've most likely already noticed that you've been infected with vampirism. Yes, don't be surprised. I did it on purpose. Your friends were trying to catch a vampire, and now I'll give them that chance. You have been tied up, and cannot escape the vampire hunters. If they did manage to move their respawn point here to the lower fort, your clanmates can have as much fun as their hearts desire, killing a vampire over and over again.
Lancelot was clearly imagining everything I was telling him in great detail, and he didn't like the perspective. His face reflected not mere fear, but full-blown panic. And while he was in that state, I continued my speech, just working the man over.
By the way, in the early stages, vampirism is not all that serious, and for the first few hours, the disease is easy to cure. All you'd have to do is drink a major elixir of health, or an elixir of cure disease. But if you take too long, the situation will get more complicated. Then you'll need rare elixirs and purification in temples. Why am I telling you this? Well, I want to propose a deal. You tell me honestly why the members of your clan came to the lower fort, and I'll give you a healing elixir. By the way, if you do not agree to negotiate with a vampire for some reason, I have another option.
I pointed at the inactive, tied-up bowman.
Trading skill increased to level 26.
There was no cause for worry. The captive agreed to work with me practically at once. And the more he said, the gloomier Max Sochnier, who was standing next to me, became. My mistrust and suspicion when it came to his nephew was now 100% justified. Yes, all of this activity of the clan Life-Giving Light had been organized by none other than Antonius Just, and with just one goal, to capture a vampire player by the name of Amra and give him up to anyone who might want to kill a blood-sucking monster. From what the paladin said, it remained unclear whether Antonius Just had decided to betray us from the start, or if he'd come to that decision after watching my last video clip where I'd announced my vampirism. But it didn't really matter. What was important was that I had gotten too relaxed and careless, and acted too predictable. Before, during the Great Hunt, I had always stayed a step ahead of the majority of players, who were easy to predict, making unexpected moves and muddling my tracks. But now, Antonius Just had predicted the route of my army and the place I was most likely to spend the night, the well-defended lower fort on the banks of the River Styx. The only thing the traitor had been mistaken about was that he had seriously underestimated the movement speed of my army, and supposed the orcs would arrive to the fort at night, along with their vampire chieftain, who should most likely be afraid of sunlight and thus could not appear in Boundless Realm until sundown. The Life-Giving Light's calculation was based on letting me get to the fort and change my respawn point here. After that, they would suddenly open a portal and the whole clan would burst into the fortress to destroy everything alive. At the same time as that landing party, another 15 players from the first group were going to log in, having jumped to the fort earlier using just such a portal scroll in order to evaluate the situation on the ground.
As far as I know, there were other players preparing to jump through the portal together with our clan. The greedy Antonius Just even sold tickets to the vampire hunt. But they were only expecting activity closer to 11 this evening, or maybe even midnight. Who could have thought that you'd get to the fort so early?
I asked the paladin, as if in passing, where the portal came out in the fort, and was told it was right on top of the respawn stone.
Great. That simplified things greatly.
The captive couldn't have known about our preparations, but meanwhile, my friends should have been nearly finished booby-trapping the stone. In just a little bit, the unfortunate guests and any players trying to respawn could expect a big surprise. Considering the conversation with the bound prisoner finished, I fed him a whole vial of elixir of cure disease with my own hands in order to imitate healing and not have to explain why he'd never truly be infected with vampirism. Then I gave a wave to Akella, who was standing nearby, and the hardened forest wolf quickly tore open the throat of the helpless prisoner, sending the paladin to respawn.
Animal control skill increased to level 43. Experience received, 4,720 experience. Level 52.
I noted with satisfaction that my loyal Akella had gone up 7 levels from just one lone enemy, and was now even higher level than his master. I barely got a few drips of experience for that. I suppose, considering the curse, I needed to do whatever I could so Amra wouldn't share their experience, otherwise it would just disappear into thin air. And as for the particularly sweet enemies, I should purposely feed them to the Great Pack, because my predators were getting a respectable 75% bonus to experience. Based on those calculations, I didn't help my friends place sharpened stakes around the respawn stone. Let the forest nymph, ogre, and naiad share the likely large prize among themselves for the attackers landing in the trap. I told my friends my decision, and found complete understanding. And while my companions were busy with construction, I decided to deal with my new messages and froze in surprise. The spiked ball on a chain had long been in Amra's main weapon slot, but meanwhile, there was still a message flickering that I had a package waiting for me. What the hell? I opened the message, and just then, a couple of ghastly-looking winged demons appeared a step away. They threw a wooden box bound with metal bands carelessly at my feet, then disappeared without a trace. On the outside of the heavy and apparently voluminous box, there was a sheet of paper affixed with red wax, and I read the measured calligraphic handwriting.
Our new confrere. You're just the 18th of us in all Boundless Realm, and the youngest of our cohort. Take this gift from more experienced and cautious players, and may it help you survive in this harsh and unjust world.
The latches of the box were easy to throw back. As soon as I had the lid open, I saw a bunch of flasks carefully placed atop fresh hay. Each of them had a barely visible tag describing the contents. A plaque on the inside of the lid read,
complete collection of blood samples of the inhabitants of the Lilac Mountains of the Eastern Continent, 50 vials. I didn't find the name of the mystery sender, and the strange letter disappeared from my mailbox as soon as I opened the package. But such clandestine secrecy was perfectly understandable. Apparently, a vampire player with carefully guarded anonymity had decided to help me level my vampiric abilities as fast as possible. Although, if I thought about it, the box of blood samples could have been sent with just as much success by someone trying to pretend to be a vampire to earn my trust. In any case, the blood was real, which I immediately became convinced of after tasting a few samples. Achievement unlocked. Taste tester, 93 of 1,000. Achievement unlocked. Taste tester, 94 of 1,000. Achievement unlocked. Taste tester, 100 of 1,000. New racial ability unlocked. Incorporeity. Your character may become incorporeal for 30 seconds, making him invulnerable to physical damage. Using this ability will cost 50 endurance points. Recharge time is 24 hours. A new cloud-shaped pictogram popped up on my screen next to the icons for night vision, search for life, and undead apathy. What could I say? This was great news. Now Amra could escape a battle if everything turned out wrong. But after that, I decided to stop the blood sampling so I wouldn't repeat the error I'd made drinking too much blood in Dotur Kawe. Last time, my goblin vampire had become intoxicated for a prolonged period. What was more, the boy Johnny, the best sentry in my army, came up to me just then.
Captain Amra, there's a thick white fog coming up the river. I can't see through it at all, but I heard a few splashes and screeches from the river, as if someone was rowing with oars. The other sentries are laughing at me. They say I've been bitten by the fear bug, but I decided to warn you just in case.
I always took Johnny's warnings very seriously, because the smart and ambitious boy had proven several times that he was the best sentry in my squadron. So I ordered the orcs to carry the heavy chest of vials into my tent, which the orcs had already pitched in the very center of the fort, despite the fact that there were little houses perfectly suited for their commander to live in. I then went up to the northern sentry tower after Johnny. The area beyond the fort walls was so thick with fog, it looked like the river and earth were covered in a layer of milk.
"Hey, I heard a sound from over there," said the boy,
pointing in one direction, but immediately slightly shifting his hand.
"No, the sound is coming from over there. Can you hear it? It sounds like oars splashing."
Perception check failed. No, I couldn't hear any suspicious sounds, no matter how I strained my huge green ears. There was no oar splashing, or any screeching of oarlocks. Just the croaking of some far-off frogs, the barely audible lapping of river waves on sand, and the abrupt guttural cries of a swamp bird. Nevertheless, I had no reason not to trust the observant sentry boy, so I activated night vision and search for life, making the gloomy world more contrasting and warm-blooded creatures easier to see. I nearly shouted in fear. On the river, just 50 meters from the walls of our fort, there were at least 10 long, narrow boats filled with huge creatures. The unexpected visitors were stealing right up to our fort under cover of fog. There were more than 100, maybe even nearly 2. I could see that many of them were armed. It seemed these mysterious strangers had aggressive intentions, but I couldn't tell why they were going so slow and not attacking the fort. By the way, as soon as I noticed the attackers sneaking up to the fort, their markers appeared on the minimap, and they were round and red. NPCs, not living players. Also, the mobs were aggressively inclined, and what was more, I saw black skulls over the figures on the river, which meant they were more than 50 levels higher than me. My heart still slightly slowed its pace. Then, suddenly, there was a break in the fog, and I saw the unexpected guests clearly. Strong, muscular figures, some of them were wearing leather vests or chainmail, but most of the warriors were stripped to the belt and marked with screamingly loud war paint on their torsos. But most importantly, they had the heads of canines on totally human bodies. Rougarous. I immediately remembered that the lower fort was located on the border of their lands. I sent my sister a private message about the arrival of our aggressive Rougarou neighbors and asked her to organize our defenders on the walls without too much noise. I then ordered Johnny to remain here on the sentry tower and blow the alarm horn only if something happened to me,
and decisively jumped off the sentry tower down to the wall of the fort. Yes, the height was extreme, 7 meters, but I did a somersault down a slope when I landed, significantly easing the fall, so I didn't get seriously wounded. Successful agility check. Experience received, 17 experience. Acrobatics skill increased to level 21. At first glance, my actions may have seemed spontaneous, senseless, or poorly thought out, but they were nothing of the sort. My big-eared goblin herbalist had a very significant bonus to the reaction of Rougarous, so I wasn't expecting them to be aggressive toward me. And if that didn't work, I could always include the two most dangerous enemies in the Grey Pack, thus removing them from the enemy army. But I had to figure out why the high-level Rougarous had shown up near the fort before the dog-headed creatures collided with my orcs in battle. I didn't even manage to get to the water's edge before a whole bedsheet of messages ran before my eyes about successful charisma checks and Rougarou reactions. The NPC markers on the minimap changed color from red to yellow. The hostility had dissipated. The bowmen I had not noticed earlier, who already managed to land on the bank and hide in the rocks, dropped their weapons on my approach. So far, my calculation was fully justified.
"What a splendid little goblin boy! His ears are so cute! I want to take him as my pet!" came the dainty voice of a capricious girl from one of the boats. I turned to the sound. Chai Ni Shu, Princess of the Clan of the White Lily, Level 84 Rougarou Huntress. At the very bow of the boat, in a long, dark green cloak, there was a pretty girl, whose anthropoid body transitioned surprisingly harmoniously into the snout of a shaggy little dog. Huge anime eyes, gold earrings on fluffy protruding ears, and sharp teeth completed the image of the Rougarou princess. Overall, the huntress looked funny and unusual. By the way, she was the only one marked with a red skull, not black, meaning she was just 20-plus levels above my Amra. Also, Chinese Shu's marker on the minimap was the only green one, meaning friendly. "Bring him to me! I'll take this little goblin as a living toy!"
"What?" That was already an excessive and perverse expression of friendship. I was not at all at peace with the living as the house pet of an NPC princess. But meanwhile, the two soldiers nearest me had already jumped from their boats into the shallows and were lunging in my direction to carry out their princess's order. I had to demonstrate my power to the Rougarou. I grabbed one of the clawed paws stretching out toward me and squeezed it in my hand.
Successful strength check. Experience received, 180 experience.
The distinct crunch of breaking bones rang out, drowned out by shouts of pain. I didn't torture the Rougarous, who hadn't done anything wrong, and quickly let the crippled warriors go. After that, annoyedly dismissing the pop-up system messages suggesting Amra take hand-to-hand combat or butcher as secondary skills, I spoke loudly.
"Great and wonderful Princess Chinese Shu! It seems there's been a misunderstanding, and you've taken me for someone else. I assure you, I am not some inoffensive little critter, and certainly not a house pet. Allow me to introduce myself. I am Amra, the leader of an orcish army. And if you were leading your brave warriors to this fort, I'm afraid I have to upset you. My savages have already cut down the group of undying inside. Orcs and goblins are not enemies of the Rougarou, so I am enthusiastic to see your war party at the walls of the Riverine Fortress, because we have something to offer you, something to warn you about, and something to ask of you."
The Rougarous didn't reach for their weapons, although that was thanks to the fact that they were still watching their princess, awaiting her decision. Chinese Shu, meanwhile, was in pensive silence, and I couldn't predict her response based on the bored expression frozen on her fluffy snout. I mean, even professional poker players showed more emotion than this frozen hairy mask. Finally, one of the large Rougarous in the boat walked up to the princess and whispered something to her barely audibly. Amra failed another perception check, so I couldn't hear a single one of her advisor's words. At the same time, I was attentively watching the quite remarkable Rougarou.
Uvaridor Shu, Regent of the Clan of the White Lily, Level 124 Rougarou Druid.
Regent? So here was the true leader of the clan, as Princess Chinese Shu was still considered underage.
and she clearly heeded the words of her advisor, because right after his hint, she finally came to a decision and pronounced in a celebratory voice,
"An enemy of an enemy is practically a friend. The Clan of the White Lily is happy to discuss any issue with you and invites Captain Amra, as well as all of